Just before we start, I want to, as you got your hymnal there, turn to page 115. The hymn there is Everybody Worship. And I had never heard it this way, but one of our deacons in Jamaica, Carlton Sterling, he says, okay now, he says to this last Sabbath, I want all the men singing, come now, everybody worship, with a prayer and songs of praise. So you always sing those first two lines. And then, when it comes to verse 1, all the women break off and just sing verse 1. While the men are still singing, come now, everybody worship with a prayer and song of praise. And so it was a modified round. In elementary school, you might have learned about singing in rounds. And so he modified this, and it works that way. And it was quite a surprise to the congregation because we weren't prepared for this. But by the time we got through it, we could see what was going on. And it was kind of an interesting way to do it. He seemed apologetic a little bit that he'd caught us by surprise. But if you think about it, they do work together. And so I just thought I'd mention to you, you can do some things differently from time to time with hymns. And by the way, Mr. Chris Rivera, you're doing a very good job. I don't know if it's all the days you listen to the Beach Boys and the Rolling Stones or what, but you've got music down. Why are you here? Why are we resting today on the Sabbath? I know we all want to have a solid and clear relationship with God. We want to have a sure knowledge that He knows that we honor Him. We want our God to know that we distinctly love Him and that we put Him first. And we do find ourselves in a continuing, although small, fellowship, indeed centuries old, that are keeping the Sabbath. And we do all we can to demonstrate our faithfulness to God in keeping the Sabbath. An interesting perspective about the Sabbath when you think of the commandment and how it is previously backed up by the days of creation and the seventh day of creation being the Sabbath, it says it was made for mankind. And as you move in conversation with people here and there and you speak with differing people, you find out there are other people that keep the Sabbath. Certainly there's the Jewish people, there's Seventh-day Adventists. My wife was looking through a book and found that there is a group of Catholics, Seventh-day keeping Catholics as well. There's many people that keep the Sabbath. And when you think of that, and then you go back to that, it says the Sabbath was made for mankind. There are many people that know about the Sabbath, but don't clearly darken the door of keeping the other days that God has asked us to keep, nor of keeping the other portions of His law. But the other days that God has us to keep, the holy days, if you think through them, and I can at some point talk to you about how they're part of God's ongoing and eternal deliverance of His ways, but the holy days, when you find them mentioned in the Pentateuch, or the first five books of the Bible, are mentioned as days that are given to the Israelites. And the Israelites at that time were the church in the wilderness. So sometimes that explains why some people understand the Sabbath, because they're part of mankind. But the holy days are something that are a little bit different that the church understands. And this is helpful for us to remember. But we are God's people. We're soldiers of the Word, and the Word doesn't tell us that we must be keeping these days. Sometimes we're refugees. sometimes we're cast out, sometimes we're the product of discrimination. Sometimes Satan uses tricks to derail us on the subject of which days we should keep. Sometimes there's matters of church government, self-righteousness, prophecy, doctrine that come into the believers of God's ways and derail us and get us off the track. But we need to make sure that we're sound in our understanding of the Sabbath and that we're clearly aware of these days, the Sabbath day that we keep. I want to look at the Sabbath day from a different perspective than I think you might have enjoyed previously. In Mark 2, 27 and 28, there is the distinct words of Christ about the Sabbath. Just previous to those verses in Mark 2, beginning with 23, it came to pass when he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath, or Sabbath day, and his disciples began, as they went, to pluck the ears of grain. And the Pharisees said unto them, Behold, why do on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? It wasn't lawful according to their Pharisaical law. He said unto them, Have you not heard what David did when he had need and was hungry, how he that went and those that were with him, how he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar, the high priest, and did eat the showbread, or called the bread of presence, which is not lawful to eat, but for the priests, and he gave those that were with him. And he said unto them, The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. Continuing in 3 verse 1. And he entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man there which had a withered hand. And he said unto the man who had the withered hand, Stand forth. And he said to him, Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath days? So you stand here in the middle with your withered hand, and I'm going to ask this question. Is it okay to do good things on the Sabbath days? Or to do evil, to save life or to kill. Now the Pharisees then held their peace. And when he looked around about on them with anger, a rather strong word, he was grieved for the hardness of their hearts. And he said to the man, Stretch forth your hand. He stretched it out, and the hand was restored whole as the other hand. And the Pharisees went out, and took counsel how with the Herodians against him, how they might destroy him. So their idea of this miracle that he performed with the man with the hand that was withered, and the illustration of his men, the disciples, eating grain, that this irritated them so much they wanted to kill him. As you read through this, we see Christ honored the Sabbath. But he was judged by his actions to the point the Pharisees really were after to destroy him. Now in this first episode, the Pharisees considered their eating of grain from the fields on the Sabbath was breaking two of their 39 statutes that they had organized about the keeping of the Sabbath. These 39 prohibitions included that you could not harvest on the Sabbath and you could not thresh on the Sabbath. And so he was breaking two of their rules. He would take the grain, put it in your hand, rub it back and forth. You would then have the husk that would come off, and you could work it with your hand a little bit. It would come to the top, and as I taught my children when they were very young in Wyoming, you could do this and blow, and the husk would blow out, and your hand would be left with the grain of wheat. And you can then pop that in your mouth and eat fresh wheat. And it's delicious. It turns rather sweet quickly as you masticate upon it. But he was doing these things, And when he said that they ate this bread, this showbread. By parallel example, this is covered in Matthew 12, verse 4. He entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but was only for the priests. Matthew 12, verse 5 now. Have you not read in the law that on the day of the Sabbath days, the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? But I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple. If you had known what this means, I would have mercy and not sacrifice. You would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath day. And he refers then to Hosea 6, verse 6. I've put into my notes, it says, I desired mercy and not sacrifice in the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. So this showed that mercy outweighed sacrifice on the Sabbath. And generally, mercy outweighs anything in life. So we should be a merciful people. Sometimes in our last few decades of being Christian in our congregations, we have not been real merciful on the matter of judging what someone may or choose to do on the Sabbath. We have been rather judges. Now, the second episode where the healing of the man's hand took place, the Pharisees had an opinion, again, in their legislation of God's law, that if there was a real emergency, you could heal on the Sabbath. But they then decided who was having the real emergency. Upon our travels in life, we've come down to different times in life, and we find out what is a real emergency and what isn't. Here Jesus broadened the principle of the Sabbath keeping, and it's understood by the Pharisees, to understand that you could do good things on the Sabbath. It would appear David already knew of it. If you read in Psalm 25, verse 10, it says, all the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth unto such as keep His covenant and His testimonies. When we look at the laws of God, mercy and truth should be very important to us. When I was just a child, we would drive 180 miles one way to church services in Colorado from Torrington, Wyoming. And on one winter day, making that trip, my father and mother and us three kids in the car, we came upon an auto accident that had happened out in the middle of what's called the gun barrel alley. There's a 30-mile stretch of highway that's absolutely straight. And in the winter, and it had been snowing, there had been a car accident. And so my dad, having a medical background, pulled off to see what help he could be, because we're here in the middle of isolation, basically, nothing around for miles and miles, to see what could be done. And this was back in the 1950s when windshields were not made as they are now. And the woman was cut up very badly around the face and was bleeding profusely. And she needed to get to a hospital quick. And in thinking of all that, word then came that someone had saw the accident and had driven on down into Cheyenne, 45 miles away, to get the ambulance to come. Well, Dad didn't think 45 minutes one way just to get the ambulance to come was sufficient, that she needed medical help sooner than that. So he bundled her into the car with us, and we went on down towards the hospital. In all of that, one unique thing that happened, and it kind of points to the subject of having mercy and doing good on the Sabbath, Dad looked up at the horizon. There was a farmhouse on a hill. And when my mother and father got married, it was on January 1st, 1945. And they went to Cheyenne from Scottsbluff, Nebraska for their honeymoon. And they were on the same road. And at that point, I remember Dad and Mom remarking upon it, they had had three flat tires, three blowouts, all at the same time. And that farmhouse up there is where my dad had trekked to and found the farmer and his wife and family. And they had come down and took care of the flats. In those days, you know, there wasn't a tire shop around every corner, nary a 7-Eleven or a cell phone either. So they sat there, and the farmer's wife had some chicken that she fried up for them and put in a basket and brought it down to them, and that they ate that in the car while their tires were being fixed. To me, that's always stood as, I don't know, it's a wild memory to know that your dad helped somebody else out at the same place where he was helped out. Where your mom and dad were helped out, they're now helping someone else out. It was stranger than fiction, you know? And at any rate, they had done good. In the second episode, there was this doing good. The first episode, when they were accused of taking of the bread which wasn't proper to eat, and they had been harvesting and threshing, part of the ordinances of the Talmudic law on Sabbath keeping has to do with eggs. You know, the kind you eat for breakfast. Now, if the egg that you've decided to have for your breakfast is from a laying hen, you should not eat that egg, because that chicken worked, quote unquote, underlined, emboldened, to produce that egg. Now, that doesn't address whether or not you can turn on the oven or the frying pan to cook the egg and all that, the work that you might have to even make it over easy. You know, this is work too, but you should not eat an egg off of a laying hen. Now, if that egg is part of a hen that you're fattening up to stew or bake, that's okay, because that egg is just part of the chicken that fell off. And that's permissible. That's how ridiculous man's ways can become. In the population of Judea, they had invented various forms of keeping of God's law. And the Judaism had broken off into different groups. There are Essenes, Sadducees, Pharisees, mystics. They all had their own little do's and don'ts. And Christ, in bringing this to the attention of that heritage, he, in his typical style of answering their questions, answered them with questions and making statements from the Bible, so that they were then left to squabble about who is the more right. He used what is sometimes called major-minor thinking. If you would say something applies in the minor, it certainly would apply in the major. He uses this as an example in Matthew 12, 11 through 13. He said unto them, "What man shall there be among you which shall have one sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days." The minor-major comparison is discussed here. If you will do it to a sheep, why wouldn't you do it to a man? And if you go through Mark and Luke, you'll find that there are four different occasions which says Christ kept the Sabbath faithfully and worshipped in the synagogue. So we know that this was his habit. The four references, if you wish to note them, are Mark 1:21, Mark 6:2, Luke 4:16, and Luke 4:21. This subject of the Sabbath is a way in which we reconstitute our foundation and make sure that we're very strong in what we understand and know and our beliefs. Sometimes in the recent past, I've given various sermons about spiritual discernment. And I believe that we need to have strong discernment and improved discernment about the Sabbath as well. And Christ, when he talked of the Sabbath, and I've read to you already today, put it this way: the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. Now, I want to spend just a little technical time, as is necessary from time to time, to go through words and just what does it mean. It does say the Sabbath was made. Now, when you make anything, it implies that you've done something. My wife will make and has made in this recent past with our son and his family, and teaching Clint's wife Annette the art of how to make bread. And she's not had any experience with that, and she's quite a capable learner and quite a capable mother for that matter, doing very well in that. But she had never made bread and Clint always has enjoyed homemade bread from Mom when he comes home. She'll make every time our kids come home, they get a fresh batch of homemade cinnamon rolls. And sometimes there's two types, one with raisins and pecans inside, and then the drizzled sugar and... Maurice, that's right, just can't go on with it, can I? And the other type has got that white sugar over the top, you know? And they're nutritious because they're made from whole wheat. Some things to make up for them being cinnamon rolls, I guess. But it says made. Looking at this word from Vine's Expository Dictionary of Biblical Words, made is sometimes translated, it says, by the passive voice of the verb to make. Now we go back a little bit, something you want to forget, English, junior year high school, okay? But there's passive and active verbs. And when this word made is used, the biblical use of it is in the passive voice. It isn't like made cinnamon rolls, which employs putting all kinds of ingredients together, working it, letting it rise, making your toppings and all these things. It's a passive use of the word made. Now, it also says that the Lord, the Son of Man, is Lord also of the Sabbath. Lord can be translated in the King James Version from the word kurios in the Greek. It can be translated God, Lord, Master, or Sir. So it's a term of elevation of one's worth or rate in the comparison. And then it says Sabbath. The Lord made the Sabbath. Now that comes from the word sabbaton with two B's. S-A-B-B-T-O-N. This root means something important to us. The double B is telling us that there is an intensity to this. Now, when we see something's intense, it's a little bit more important. It's gathered a little strength to it. And so what we have here is the making was making by cessation of labor. It is the ceasing of labor that makes for the Sabbath. And the double B is telling us that it's a very important day. The idea is not that the relaxation or refreshment is what we should be having, but it's a cessation of activity. I found this, going again from Vine's Expository. The Old Testament regulations were developed and systematized to such an extent that they became a burden upon the people who otherwise rejoiced in the rest of the Sabbath that it was provided. And they became a byword for absurd extravagance. Two treatises of the Mishnah are entirely occupied with regulations for the observances as well as with the discussions of keeping the rabbinical opinions of the Sabbath. They spent a lot of time organizing how they would think about it. Now, Sabbath, with two B's, or sabbaton, is a Greek word, and it's a noun. Sabbat, the Hebrew word with two B's, is a noun. But Sabbat with one B is a verb. Sabbath can be used as a verb in the Bible or as a noun. And so when you're saying you're keeping the Sabbath, we're talking about keeping cessation. That goes on to say the noun sabbat with two B's, the Hebrew word, is derived from the Hebrew verb sabbat, which means to cease. Since the most ancient characteristic of the seventh-day observance is that all work ceased, this Sabbath would mean something like cessation day, a day in which all work stops. The noun sabbaton with two B's in Greek arose from the influence of the Hebrew noun sabbat with two B's. The Revised Standard Version renders all 11 occurrences as solemn rest or day of solemn rest. Like sabbat with two B's, sabbaton refers both to the observance of the Sabbath day and to the feast days. Now, when the Sabbath was made was in Genesis 2. If I could have somebody come up here. I have some handouts. One per person if they wish. This crib sheet is all filled in for you. I gave this sermon recently in St. Petersburg and Tampa, and I didn't fill it in for them. But today is a day of mercy, so I filled it in for you. Now, with the knowledge that Christ said the Sabbath was made for man, and your biblical knowledge saying that you know that that came from the time when the Sabbath was made in Genesis 2, I want you to look with me in Genesis 1 and 2 so that we have a fuller understanding of what it means that the Sabbath was made. So turn in your Bibles to Genesis 1. Now, you know that the Sabbath and its ordination isn't coming into the picture until chapter 2. But I want you to see what does come into the picture in chapter 1. And once you see this, and you couple that with the understanding that there is a preparation day, which is the sixth day of the week, when you prepare for the return of Christ in the millennium, did I say that? There are some things you can learn. Because what we understand now about the Sabbath day tells us about the millennium tomorrow and tells us what's happening in this 1,000 years just prior to the return of Christ, which is the sixth day. the day that mankind was created. And when we see what we can from the first 6 days, we'll then know what we can envision in the millennium as well. There's an overlay here, and I'm not going to go through the complete overlay. Somewhat of it has to do with your prayerful reflection upon these days that we keep and understanding what they promise tomorrow. Now, you notice on the handout, titled The Study of Creation Week, Thinking About Genesis, what is the order of creation for the first 3 days of creation? And I have then 4 boxes for 3 days, ending in day 3A and day 3B. You could use any explanation, but for simplification, I've outlined it that way. On the first day, we come to Genesis 1. Let's just start at the beginning. In a beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void. Darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of the God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, Let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness, separated it then. And God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. So you notice under day one, I've put in the box under that, He separated light and dark. And God said, verse 6, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters that were above the firmament. And it was so, and God called the firmament heaven. And the evening and the morning were the second day. So on day two, He divided the waters, and there's room below then for life. I put in that box for you. And God said in verse 9, and that phrase, and God said, is the phrase that we will use to divide the days of creation into 8 sections. And God said, say there's a transfer of a change of thought. And in verse 9, we go on with the third one. Let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land also appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called He seas, and God saw that it was good. And God said, verse 11, and if your eye jumps up to verse 13, we're still in the third day. So God says 2 things in the third day. Hence then there's day 3A and day 3B. Let the earth bring forth grass, and herb yielding seed, and fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after his kind, and God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the third day. So on day 3, the first part of the day, or the A section, God gathered waters to reveal dry land, and then on that dry land, vegetation after its kind had its opportunities. Now, we go to the fourth day, and that is mentioned at the end of verse 19, but it starts with verse 14, when God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. Now, in the Hebrew text, it does not use the word for. So it should be the day from the night, and let them be signs and seasons and days and years. And to thoroughly confuse you, He's left out weeks. When does weeks start in the creation? You answer the question. 10 years from now, you can tell me what you think. And let them be for lights, 15 of the in the firmament and of the heaven, and to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser night to rule the night. And He made the stars also. And God put them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good, and the evening and the morning were the fourth day. So day four, and I put down heavenly lights. And so this is the order of the next 3 days of creation. And then day five begins in 20. God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that has life, and fowl that may fly above the earth and in the open firmament of heaven. And God created great whales and every living creature that moves, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters of the seas, and let the fowl multiply in the earth. And the evening and the morning were the fifth day. So on day five, He created fish and fowl, as your chart shows. Now we come to 6a and 6b. And so in 6a, beginning in verse 24, God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle, creeping things, beasts of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, so he says it a second time, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the things, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. And God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the earth, sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. So on day 6a, land animals are given their distinct position. And 6b, mankind. Now in verse 29, and God said occurs again. And if you read now through 29 through 30, these few verses in here, you see that it's a recapitulation of what all affects the life of man. I've given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree which is upon and the fruit of the tree yielding seed, and to every beast of the earth, every fowl of the air, and everything that creeps upon the earth wherein there is life. I've given every green herb for meat, and it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. What is covered in 29 and 30, we'll go to in another, near the bottom, there's another chart about freedom of motion. We'll go through that. It has more to do with that. So we have then eight frames that are filled for us, because day three and day six have two things that occur within them. And so what are the four principles at work in creation week? Well, separating light and dark and heavenly lights, everything has its place. And so I've put place in there. And then day two and day five, separation, the separation of water, dividing the water so there's room below for life, so that there can be fish in the waters and birds taking flight in the air. So there's a separation. In day 3a and day 6a, there's motion. Animals that can have motion on earth are given their opportunity to walk on the dry land. And then in 3b and 6b, life is given. So the four principles at work in creation week are place, separation, motion, and life. And there then is a parallel between the first 3 days and the second 3 days. Now hopefully you can see that parallel that I've printed for you. Now there are three blessings of the creation week. Genesis 1:22 says that there should be fruitful. 1:28 says to have dominion. And the third is in Genesis 2:3, separate and holy. Now, what is the ascending order of freedom of motion as outlined during the creation week? Well, the one thing having the least amount of motion is plant life. What has the next least amount of motion is sun, moon, and stars. The third is fish and sea creatures. The fourth is birds. Fifth are animals. They can walk in the water. They can walk on the ground. And then sixth, man can go into every area. He can fly above the clouds. He can go into the ocean's deep. He can walk upon the land. Man has the largest range of motion. Now, when we go over to chapter 2 about the Sabbath, the four principles revealed by looking at the holy day, the days of creation in this way, those four principles can be seen in the one day of the weekly Sabbath. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them, and on the seventh day God ended His work. It doesn't say He completed it, because we are still a work in motion ourselves. But He ended His work, He ceased His work which He had made, and He rested on the seventh day from all His work which He had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it He had rested from all His work which God created and made. So the four principles revealed about the Sabbath at creation also apply to the Sabbath itself. The Sabbath has its own place. Its appointed time, its place, is the seventh day. And nowhere in the Bible has that been repudiated, reclaimed, redirected, or changed. The Sabbath is always the seventh day of the week. It has its own place. Two, separation. Just as in day 2 and day 5, there was separation. The seventh day is separated. God blessed the seventh day. That's what makes it separate. No other day is blessed. Other days have importance, most surely, but no other day is blessed. Third, motion. In 2:2, God ceased from motion on the Sabbath. And yet, there is a lot of motion in the day of creation 3a and 6a. And then the fourth principle, life, is covered in chapter 2, verse 3. God put His very presence, His eternal life, in the Sabbath, and He has not taken His presence out of the Sabbath. So when you think of the Sabbath was made for man, this should give you a firmer understanding of what it means to that the Sabbath was made. So when you turn to Mark 2:27 and 28 from time to time, hopefully these principles will come very important to you. That you understand that the Sabbath has its place. It's a day which is separated from others. It's a day in which you cease from motion. in a day in which there is the life of the eternal injected right into the day. So this is what is being said by Christ, the Creator of those things that we know in Genesis, when He says that He made the Sabbath. He made a place, a separation, something without motion, a cessation, and a day in which life, His life, is interjected. Hopefully this then gives us a better understanding. Now as to the implications that this would have us to understand about the millennium, since the 7 days of creation represent 7,000 years, and we're coming to the end of the 6,000 year, the 7,000 in the millennium will be a time that is going to be different. It will have its own place, where this will be a separation from the age of man to the age of God. A day in which motion, cessation of the ways of man will end, in which the life of the Creator will be fully injected into the day. In our land today, we spend a lot of time, that's overstated, but we do spend some time trying to decide what motion we can do on the Sabbath. And there is the fact that we've come from a background varying for sure, but when we understand the Sabbath, one of the first things that our mind comes to grips with is there are people that have designed regulation, law, rigidity, charts, organized thoughts, lists of what to do and not do on the Sabbath. And while those have their place, most often with those people, they do not understand the Sabbath in the sense of place, separation, cessation of motion, and life. And you can be then understanding what you should be considering on the Sabbath as you apply it to what you might be thinking about doing in the millennium as a human being there, making then evaluations of your own self of what you can do today. But we spend a lot of time with lists of wondering, well, what can we or cannot do? When I spoke of this subject and addressed it in other congregations, a typical question is, well, is it okay then to go out and eat on the Sabbath day? For some people, the answer is no. For other people, it is yes. And for a lot of people that I've been visiting in the Caribbean, it does not even apply. There is no place to go eat because they have nothing to buy with. And I, like them, are so thankful for the peas and dumplings as they prepare it ahead. Sometimes we can and sometimes we can't. And we forget in all of this to put God into the center of our Sabbath. So in conclusion, I leave these thoughts. The Sabbath has its place in the week. It is blessed, and we cease from our motions so the presence of God can be witnessed and enjoyed. Now we are stabilizing ourselves and we're firming up our foundations. And I encourage you to look at the opportunities you have to have spiritual discernment, because God indeed has called us to peace. So look for your spiritual discernment. We can ensure our spiritual footing and stabilize ourselves and improve our relationship with God by keeping the Sabbath, following the example of our general in battle, Jesus Christ. He said the Sabbath was made. What are you making with it?